another thing it confirms is most evaluations are only 5 to 10 minutes for orthopedic exams. And the doctors are writing, oh, I spent a half hour with the person. How'd you spend a half hour when the whole thing is recorded soup to nuts in 10 minutes?
Right.
It just, you have to be an advocate for yourself. And I think that's what all of this goes down to. If you don't advocate and try to protect yourself, no one else is going to do it for you. 111, 110.
Street Cop. Hey guys, welcome to this episode of the Street Cop Training Podcast. I'm your host, founder and CEO of Street Cop Training. My name is Dennis Panino. I just listened to an episode where I didn't say that. I actually said half of it. So I got to make sure, and I don't listen to my podcast very often, but I got to make sure that I do not miss my name. It's an important part of this podcast. But a more important part of this podcast is a friend of mine. He was actually an attorney that represented me a while back for when I left the job for a good cause. It wasn't on bad terms. But Chris Gray not only does disability pensions here in the state of New Jersey, but he also does a significant amount of work with law enforcement and making sure that they're defended appropriately, they're represented appropriately, and they have a voice and the right representation when they encounter something that almost inevitably is going to happen in law enforcement. So I finally convinced his ass to get here after years. He invited me to like his fucking opening party. I'm like, I can't make it. He like got mad and, I saw him in Atlantic City. I might have been a little tipsy. Chris might have been a little tipsy. And then I was like, you better come on the fucking podcast. And he was like, that was like 3 weeks ago. So you're here.
It was after the Dennis who? And he texted me and I was like, who's this? Yeah, I mean, I work with a firm. We're all over the state of New Jersey. And the concentration of my firm is law enforcement. So I've been doing this stuff for 15 years from contracts, pensions, discipline. You know, we help out the officers that need it through all different kinds of situations because, you know, you name it, it can happen to you. And having people that actually know what they're doing makes a big difference.
You know, it's crazy that I have seen a lot of people try to do things themselves or take the cheap way out. And I know that you got to watch what you say about certain stuff. I respect that. I'm familiar with the business world and some of the rules of being an attorney and slander, libel, and trying to promote in negative ways, whatever you want to call it. One of the pieces of advice I often give to people is if you are in trouble and it looks like you're in trouble, it's probably a really good idea to go find an attorney. And you don't have to remark in regards to this part, but what I see people do is go and get union representatives to sit in on an interview. And typically those union representatives, albeit they have great purpose, they do a lot of stuff for bargaining and negotiations and contracts, they're typically not the best cops and the most savvy investigators on the police department. No offense. You guys are great. We would not be where we are without you, but let's face facts. A lot of you have checked out of the game. So when you go into an interview with a gentleman or a woman who is a savvy investigator and your rep is giving you advice on what to do and what not to do, and they can't even track where this thing's going, how many people come to your office after making a mistake like that and you have to try to correct and fix how much better it would have been if they would have just retained you to begin with, or an attorney in general, not you.
It is very difficult to undo mistakes that are made. And too often times in the internal affairs interview is where a case is won or lost. And I understand the union reps. Some of them have lots of experience. Some of them know what they should be doing down there. Some of them have been to collective bargaining seminars to learn what to do. And others are, they pulled a person off the shift that's a shop steward that doesn't have any of the training of it. So there's huge differences between what we can do as a lawyer versus what a shop steward can do that's sitting in as a wine garden rep. You know, part of the difference in the tools that are available for a lawyer is we don't work there. So we can't be insubordinate to this person that's doing the questioning. You know, we can interrupt. We can question what they're doing. We can stop the flow of things without fear of repercussions from the internal affairs individuals. You have shop stewards that go in and participate in the interviews that are still subordinate to that lieutenant from IA or the sergeant from IA that's doing it. And, you know, they're pretty much told, you're here just as a witness. You can't interrupt. You can't do all these things. Well, I'm not there just as a witness. I'm there as a lawyer. I'm there to represent. I'm there to take action to protect my client. I also have the ability to talk to my client beforehand, and it's privileged. Having the ability to go through what happened, go through the facts that are known, to be able to prepare how to describe what happened makes a big difference. And to do it in a privileged manner, no one can come question me as to what we talked about. Now, shop steward, you could be questioned. What did he tell you? What was going on? You know, what did he relay? What did he say? That puts the shop steward in a really precarious position. But the lawyer, they can't do that to us. So I've been involved in internal affairs investigations, and one of these took place in a jail in South Jersey, where they were questioning my client about pepper spraying an inmate. And the internal affairs guy kept changing the words that my client said and asking him a question, trying to get him to basically change his testimony or something else. And I was like, whoa, that's not what he said. You can't keep trying to put words in his mouth. You have to listen to what he's saying or anything else. The internal affairs guy promised to carry me out of the correctional facility if I did it again. And I kept doing it over and over and over because I'm not going to let my client take that stuff. That's not what they're supposed to do in internal affairs. And I told the internal affairs guy, look, if you're going to take me out, please do it. Let's get it on camera. You know, my kids are going to go to a much better college if you do this to me because you're just so wrong.
Wow. How many times have you seen internal affairs go in with no impartial sense of law in mind and just complete targeting with vengeance and wrath to make sure that this goes one way and you're able to kind of put a fork in the road and halt the progress? But how often are you seeing that it's not fair and impartial?
There are a very good number of internal affairs people that really are just trying to do their job. Let me figure out the facts. Let me see where this goes. Let's get the information. There are sometimes internal affairs is used more as a targeting, more directed maneuver to try to remove officers. And you have to know the difference when you're sitting in there to see it. And there's different things you can do to disrupt it. And also preparing your person ahead of time. I mean, look, a lot of times they're going to know before they walk in that door what kind of treatment they're going to get, who they're dealing with, what the consequences of it are going to be. So it's all in the preparation going into it with the client to get them ready for these things, to be prepared if it is going to be more accusatory and biased in the investigation. So it's one of those things, again, where counsel versus a shop steward matters to really upend and stop those, you know, deceitful tactics and mechanisms that internal affairs can apply.
I know you're in New Jersey, and I guess you can't speak on behalf of other states, but just for example, in New Jersey, when do you have the right to retain an attorney during an internal affairs investigation? Is it every single IA, every time you're a target, you're allowed to consult with your attorney?
Yes. Under the Attorney General's guidelines, they have to give you a target letter to say, look, you're the target. That's the AG's office way to give you notice that, hey, there's an internal affairs coming. You need to get ready for this. And that's when, under most of the protection plans, whether it be PBA or FOP, it triggers your ability to get counsel and bring them in right at that point. So the process was set up to have that, where you get notice, you can be prepared, and you have a reasonable amount of time to have the interview scheduled. It shouldn't be, here's your notice, let's go do the interview.
That happens.
It does happen in some places.
What do you do if that happens?
You have to be familiar with the guidelines in your state. So in New Jersey, the guidelines say you're given a reasonable amount of time to get your counsel there. And I've had some departments that said, you know what, we're going to do the interview, but we're going to do it at 7 o'clock at night. We're going to do the interview, we're going to do it at midnight. We're not going to bring you in on overtime. We're going to do it when you're actually scheduled to work. And I've sat in police departments at 7 p.m. I've sat at you know midnight, 3 a.m., whenever they're going to do it, because they're not going to dissuade the representation of my clients because they want to do it at off times. But they have to, under the guidelines, give you time.
when I was a more senior officer, I would tell new guys, hey, listen, here's some advice that's going to go really far for you. And I know sometimes it might seem like it's going to incur costs or be the harder route to go. But my suggestion is if you are getting an internal going and it might have some legs to it. I'm not talking about the one where you just know that it's some frivolous BS. And again, people have to understand, we're not teaching cops or guiding cops on how to break the law and get away with it. That has nothing to do with it. But unfortunately, people don't know is that police officers are where they suffer at the administration's hand. So often these internal affairs investigations often are not done for the right reasons. Sometimes they're politically motivated. Sometimes they're administratively motivated. Sometimes there are a lot of different motivations for it. And you kind of never know what you're going to get. And I've had all of them across the board where some of them were like, dude, don't worry about it. It's nothing. It's no big deal. Blah, blah, blah. This is BS. This happened. We know nothing happened. Da, da, da. Right. I get that. Then I get the one of like, you may want to get yourself, like people are coming to me behind the scenes like, hey, they've got the hatchets out. They're ready to sever some heads. You know, I've had other ones. It's just imagine there's a whole different spectrum of how this can go. You need to know what you can do during that time. And again, back to what I was saying earlier, I would tell newer guys, hey, make sure that if you can't discern what is going on, you employ your right to counsel, because the last thing you want to do is have a union rep sitting next to you who's fucking clueless, who doesn't care about you because they're not your friend. That happens. I've seen that. You're a new guy. They don't give a shit. You're just a name. You didn't go to the academy with them. You've been around 10 years. And you get unfair representation. And I know what you're saying. Well, the union doesn't do that. I'm not trying to fight with the unions. I'm saying I've seen it. I've experienced it. I've seen union people sell people out. I got sold out by my union president, who was literally working behind the scenes at the time, or whatever it was. He was our president, not state delegate. State delegate was fucking livid about it. And it's amazing that this dude got promoted and never had to do what everybody else did when he got promoted. He got to stay exactly where he was. So I put it out there that I was recording our conversations and he would no longer get on the phone call with me, because what I was being told was, you're telling your rep, then he's going to them and telling them everything that you're doing, and they're just counter chess playing your shit because they know what your next move is going to be. I would have hate to be in a position like that. I never wanted to be in a position like that, but when I was and I went to people I thought could help me, I will let you know that I was friends with this guy for a long time, worked with him, had a lot of jobs with him, and the dude sold me out for himself. And this is not uncommon, just so we're clear. So,
well, there's a lot of stuff to sort of unpack that you just went over, but even a frivolous or minimal target of internal affairs can become the building block to future discipline that's much greater. So if you don't take care of that first one that's frivolous, or you may get a day for or something else, you are setting yourself up for progressive discipline to have other problems in the future. And I think that that's something that at least law enforcement in New Jersey, for the most part, you're covered by PBA, you're covered by FOP, you're part of the legal protection plan for the PBA, the FOP national plan for the FOP. You already bought your insurance for legal representation. All you have to do is say, I want it. It doesn't cost you anything else or anything in addition to do that. So I think that members should be prepared, like you said, to say, hey, look, I need counsel to look at this. And that becomes important to have intervention early when there's the beginning cases. You now have situations in New Jersey with reporting requirements where some of those minimal or frivolous things, if you get a penalty that's greater than 5 days, it's going to be publicized at the end of the year. We're going to put out your name. They're going to put out your the offense and the details of all these things in the name of transparency, which it's another consideration you have to have in knowing that this is a consequence of what happens that sometimes the shop stewards aren't aware of. So you may say, hey, you know what? Yeah, you screwed this up. Go take 6 days. Well, then at the end of the year, you're like, oh, you know, shit, my name's out there being reported by the municipality that I had this violation. What can I do about it? Well, nothing. You already agreed to it. I can't undo that. It's not one of those situations where you're coming to me and it's too late to be able to unwind and fix it. So there's just so many dynamics involved in the discipline process, from the interview through the charges through public reporting, that it's really beneficial to have counsel involved. And I got to say that both, I think the PBA list has hundreds of attorneys that are available. And even on the list of the hundreds of attorneys that are available, there are some you repeatedly see that are doing this stuff, that are very good at this stuff, that are better than others at doing this stuff. And it's not a matter of just get a lawyer on the list. It's get one that actually does what you're dealing with, because some of the lawyers are like civil defense. Great. They can defend you when you get sued and you're going to court for civil damages. But that person doesn't necessarily know the internal affairs process, the discipline stuff, those things. It's just important to have the right person get involved to give you the right representation along the way.
It's funny because that really alludes to my next question. It's, I have it written down right in front of me. It says, what should people look for in an attorney in a discipline process? How do you filter through the hundreds of results you get? And I remember I got in trouble years and years and years ago when I was a young patrol officer. That's why I tell people, to this representation stuff. But they assigned me an attorney. I ended up being fine. I was one of the few that was out of this thing. It was an off-duty thing. And I remember thinking as a young guy, I was like 22 years old, like, this guy's a moron. The FOP got me this guy, and he just literally would sit in and these interviews, and I'm like, does he do anything? But I didn't know any better. I'm like, oh, he's an attorney. The FOP has him. And, you know, years later, I'm like, man, that could have really gone south. This guy had, if I actually became the target of something, I really wasn't a target. I was more of a witness at that time. And, I couldn't imagine if this man had started feeling some pressure. I don't think he knew where he was at times. So how do we ensure that we're finding somebody who is adequate to represent us in a situation?
Well, I think let's go back to, I think it was 2015 we did your pension?
Yeah.
You found me because someone else said, go to that guy.
Yeah.
So I know in police departments, officers talk. You want to know someone that's good at what they're doing? Find out who else people have used and who's done a good job for them, because, you know, the personal recommendation, word of mouth, is generally the best way to understand who's good at this stuff. You can ask your delegates or your executive boards of your body as to who's been doing this stuff. You can do the research. I mean, there's lists posted of all the different lawyers and, you can look into them. You can actually essentially interview the lawyer before you decide you want to use them. It's not a matter of, just call up and take whoever you want. You're actually picking the lawyer. You interview. You say, hey, have you done this before? What would you do in this circumstance? What do you think is going to happen with this thing? You got to get a good feeling from that person that they have the experience and the knowledge to be able to help you and get you through this process. And you kind of have to do your homework. You can't just take the first person that comes up, or you got to be mindful of who's making the recommendation for it. If it's someone who's not on the job saying, oh, my friend's a lawyer, they're on the list, you got to kind of look a little bit more into it. Okay, they may be on the list, but what do they do? So you really have to do your homework to make sure you have the right lawyer to do these things. The way my firm is set up, we have four partners and we all kind of do, and I don't want to say specialized because we can't say that under the New Jersey court rules, but they focus on different aspects of the labor representation and the criminal representation and the civil representation and the pension stuff. So when you have firms that are bigger and have the more attorneys in it, you may have an issue that crosses the four partners in my office because of what was involved. Like if it's a criminal case that turns into a civil case that evolves into a pension that has a grievance associated with it, you're going to be involving multiple people because you're now crossing so many different disciplines. But having a shop that can handle all of those things is what my partners and I decided we wanted to do, and to stick with what we know and not try to do every little thing that could come across our desk, like a bankruptcy or something else. We're not bankruptcy attorneys. We defend cops and their discipline, their pensions, their contracts, and those things. So
through my experiences, I feel like I get to give a lot of people advice. And I want to certainly return to discipline, but I'll stop for a second to talk about injuries and workers' compensation. I wish I had really good advice when I first got injured. And fortunately enough, even though the workers' compensation system essentially is designed to try to do everything they can to recuse themselves from responsibility, and I'll say that myself. And the reason they do that is because it's so taken advantage of that it crosses over and there's collateral damage when somebody actually needs the help and doesn't get it because it's basically just an abused system. And the crazy thing, it's not cops that abuse it. And if it is, then so be it. But it's workers' comp covers every employment type and subtype. So everybody, if you work here in the state of New Jersey, at least, and I'm sure everywhere in the country, you are covered by workers' compensation if an injury occurs. So they're a broad spectrum of different kinds of people that they're going to represent. So, you know, you're getting bus drivers and you're getting chefs and you name it. If they're out on injury, workers' comp is doing everything they can to try to catch them. Really is the game. And in turn, they make it very difficult and very uncomfortable for you to get the actual medical attention that you need. As nuts as this sounds, they're constantly a battle. I've talked to anybody who's been injured, they'll tell you workers' comp is the biggest nightmare of them all. That's how they roll. Obviously, it's a big money game for them as well. I'm going to give a little piece of advice, and I'm going to then hand it over to you. And the question I'll have for you is, what does somebody do when they get injured? When people get injured or they're significantly injured, I see somebody get significantly injured, like somebody who gets shot or somebody who gets really significantly hurt, I'll try to find a way to get to them and say, hey, listen, I think the first thing you need to do is contact two specific attorneys, a comp attorney and also a pension attorney. Because if it looks like you're leaving on this, which it's real likely, you want to make sure your ducks in a row right from the start. And the comp attorney can fight on your behalf because when your comp nurse or assigned case manager starts denying things that you need or sends you to, dude, I'll tell you, and Chris, we'll go back in time to what I went through in a second, but do you think that's good advice? Or if somebody is injured, what's the piece of advice that you could give them? And I think this is covers probably a national scale. What should people be doing if they're injured and it looks like it's going to be a pretty good injury?
I think that when officers get injured, too often when the first thing that happens is there is some report written or some request for treatment or workers' compensation just given to the employer. Like, hey, I got hurt. I need treatment. The first mistake that's generally made is there is insufficient detail in what happened in order to cover yourself for what may come later. So in that situation where you have a real serious injury and sometimes you don't know how serious they are. You know, it could have been, I was just arresting a suspect and afterwards, you know, my back started really hurting and a report's written, you know, I injured my back while arresting a suspect. Very generic. That back injury starts going through workers' comp and of course, workers' comp at first is going to say, nothing wrong with you, nothing wrong with you, do some physical therapy. Eventually, they'll say, oh, we'll get you an MRI, then let's see if there's damage, then maybe you need surgery, all those things that happened in a long period of time under workers' comp. If that person then is going to go out for a pension or something in the end, you're left with a report from when it happened saying, I injured my back while arresting a suspect. If you are proceeding in New Jersey just under, I injured my back while arresting a suspect, you're probably going to get denied an accidental disability pension because the board is generally saying, well, that's not an undesigned and unexpected event. That's your job. You're supposed to go arrest people. Now, in the course of that struggle to arrest somebody, you know, the suspect picked you up and flung you on the ground or pushed you into the car or you know, dropped something on you. All of those details that you didn't have in your initial report that, you know, I injured my back while arresting a suspect, all of those details are what you need to have in order to be covered down the line. You may get initially denied because all the report said was, I injured my back. There's just not enough information there. So the first thing and the most important thing is what's in the initial report? What is being documented? How detailed is it? Now, it's not what you have to put necessarily in the arrest report for the suspect, unless it's related to like charges of ag assault or something else. But in a report to the employer about how you got injured, you can be more detailed and keep it more personal that of what hurt, how it hurt, you know, what the suspect did to cause that injury. So that way you're covered in the long run. So, but once you get beyond the initial reporting, yes, you should go get a workers' comp lawyer because, and I'm telling you this, I don't do workers' comp. I did it years ago at a prior firm. I haven't done it since 2013. So getting a workers' comp lawyer can help you get the right treatment, can help push through all of that bureaucratic delay and things that occur in workers' comp, get you the second opinions, get you the surgery, get you the treatment that you need to get along the way. Involving someone that does the pensions earlier, if you think this is something you can go out on, is important because we can make sure that everything is done consistent with what you're going to need to get a pension at the end, that you're checking all the right boxes and doing all the right things along the way. Because, you know, a conversation that we continually have with clients when they come in is, well, you know, I'm going to get a settlement from workers' comp. You know, I want to make sure I can do that and get my pension. Well, in New Jersey, you can't do both. You're not going to collect both because there's an offset. And essentially, it's a mechanism that was set up that workers' comp will pay money to the pension to offset what your pension costs, which is the way the system should work. If you got injured on the job, it's some cost savings to the pension board. The pension for most law enforcement in New Jersey at a 66 2/3 is probably worth around $2.5 million. So when you're getting 2/3 of your pay tax-free for the rest of your life, at least until you turn 65, then there are some taxes. But and it can come for most places with fully paid for health care, your pension's worth a lot more than any workers' comp case is ever going to be. Your attention should be focused on, okay, what do I got to do to get the pension? I'll use the workers' comp case to get my treatment, but don't worry about a lump sum award from workers' comp because your pension is the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow there. So that's a conversation that I have with almost everyone that comes in explaining the pension process and why it's so much more important to do what pensions needs as opposed to necessarily everything that workers' comp wants.
One other thing I want to throw in there for the people who are on the fence about getting a comp attorney is, one, tell us how comp attorneys are paid.
Generally, workers' comp attorneys get paid when there's some settlement at the end of the case. So generally, there's no upfront cost to anybody that goes to get a workers' comp lawyer. On the back end, there's generally a fee. It's like, I think it's like 20% of what the award is. And depending on what kind of award it is, it's even partly paid for by the employer. So the system was set up to let you get counsel at no cost upfront to make sure you get whatever treatment that you need along the way. And there's plenty of good workers' comp attorneys that are used to more actively engaging with their clients to get the treatment, to get the things going along. And there's also workers' comp attorneys that, for lack of a better description, are lazier and just kind of wait to let things progress and kind of sit back and wait to collect the money at the end. So in selecting even the workers' comp attorney, you got to do your homework. You got to see who helped someone else, who did good things, who practices in your area. As a big aspect of it.
I guess that kind of goes back to one point I was going to return to, but might as well do it now. Even for us as a business, and when you're in business, I think any business owner agrees that you're going to be talking to a lot of attorneys. Just how business goes, unfortunately. Business is a very, very difficult thing to get involved in, especially an expanding business, especially a business when you're green and you don't have guidance from people who have done this for 25, 30 years, and you're learning stuff the hard way. Essentially, it's how you grow in business. Hence why we kind of buy books from people who were in business, or we go to mastermind groups with people who are in business so they can help you understand what not to do, what to do. That's really the whole game. So even for us, we've gotten good at, we're at least better at selecting attorneys. And I got to tell you, if we have an issue, we have to find somebody to retain, we'll probably interview 8 to 10 people before we make a decision. And I want to encourage other people to do that as well, especially when you have the ability to retain. I've had literally attorneys, I think, and I want to be very clear, a comp attorney and a pension attorney are two different people.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So they're not the same. So if you're like, well, the comp guy is going to help me get my pension, they're not. That's not how it works.
There are, at least in Jersey, there are very few people that do pensions. And if you look at the board agendas, you'll see the same names pop up every month that have multiple clients.
So that's a good place to find the pension attorneys to see who's representing a lot of people at their board meetings, at publicized board meetings.
And for the most part, you can even see how their cases did and see who's getting the accidentals, who's getting the ordinaries, who's winning the appeals. You can find all that stuff there if you do your homework. And you have to look into it. It's a big thing. And it's also goes back to one of your points earlier about being concerned necessarily about the cost versus the experience. And you can go find people that will do pension work cheap, and you're going to get cheap pension work. So it's part of, you know, what you want to invest in and what you want to do with your future, understanding that, you know, is it worth saving a couple $1,000s now, risking a couple $1,000,000 later? And people really need to understand that that pension is millions. They don't see it that way, and they don't think about it. Like, I don't know when you were going through the process, if you thought, oh, wait a minute, this is a decision that means millions of dollars for my life going forward as you were going through this, or is it just the next paycheck I'm going to get next month as you're thinking about it?
Hey guys, if you're enjoying the Street Cop podcast, do us a favor and give us a review on iTunes or Spotify, wherever you're listening to us. Tell a friend. We don't charge anything for the episodes. We appreciate your support. Check us out on any social platform by putting into the search bar Street Cop Training. Give us a follow. We have a lot of free content coming out every single day that you might not catch here on the podcast. And it's important for you to be able to do your job more professionally. And we also entertain you as well. You know, as I recall it, you know, I don't want to get too much into detail of the significance of my injuries, but they were enough, and you can allude to this and comment, obviously, to qualify for a permanent disability. And you know, if anybody wants to ever hear the whole thing of what happened, that's one thing. Everybody knows me knows exactly what happened.
But even outside of the injury, yeah. just the consequence of the decision to pension and the value of what that pension is worth and what it means for the rest of your life.
I'm going to get to that point in the road. I'm going to try to give a little history as to what the conversation that we had was when I finally came across Chris Gray. And, you know, I started to become very concerned because when I got injured, I didn't think this was going to be a permanent thing. That's the fucking problem.
Yeah.
So my wife, who's my girlfriend at the time, said, you know, I think we had a kid already, something like that. Yeah, we already had my son. So I said, listen, I just got to get a few things touched up. My knee, I'll be back to work, no big deal. And I remember, you know, a couple months into it, they're like, hey, this you're not going back. And I'm like, the doctor, I'm like, what do you mean I'm not going back? He's like, you're not, do you know how much you're going to need? First of all, you need a new knee at some point in your life. He's like, but secondly, you know, this is significant. So I wasn't treating it like it could have been that way. So I think you need to treat it like it has the potential to go that way. And I got to tell you, I was fortunate enough to get some guidance from Chris very quickly once I started realizing that, oh my God, like I can't believe I'm not going back. Well, if that's the case, I really just start thinking about what that means for me now moving forward and if I'm eligible to receive a pension for 14 years of service. So oddly enough, and I know the guy meant it all well, but somebody from my union was like, giving me this cockamamie advice. It was and I can't emphasize this enough. It was meant well. It was completely wrong. And so I said, let me make a few phone calls. And I called Chris and we had a conversation. And this is, you know, over 8 years, about 8 years ago now. I haven't seen you in 8 years. And we had a very brief conversation about the seriousness of this. And I said, well, I'll come in and see you. And then he came in, we had the discussion. I just said, you know, who do I make the check out to? Because I had recognized at that point the severity and the seriousness of what I was looking at and how quickly I could have missed what I was entitled to receive because I didn't know any better and I wasn't educated. I don't even know why this isn't something you teach in the academy. You know what I mean? This is something you should know going into this job, and that's why we're doing this program at this time.
Yeah, they don't, in the academy, teach you about how you get out because there's...
I don't want to even say how to get out or get the pension, but what you're entitled to in case this happens.
Correct. Yeah. This whole system is set up as essentially insurance for the work that you do. because police, fire, corrections all require such enhanced physical abilities to do those things, and you sacrifice a lot to do those things. So if you get injured in the line of duty and you can't work full duty, you can't be a cop anymore. Like, you sacrificed all that time with academy and years on the job and, you know, all the overtime and everything else that you did. The system was set up as a protection for you in case something happened that you did get injured and you can't do this job anymore. And something that people don't necessarily completely understand about pensions, and you're a good example of this. The pension is just saying you can't do police work anymore. You can't do corrections work. You can't do firefighter work. You can't meet the physical requirements to do that because no department is required to maintain permanent light duty or permanent restrictions for anybody. So although you are on a disability pension, you are only disabled from doing police work, not anything else in the world. And a lot of officers don't understand that. And you were talking about the first phone call and the first interaction that we have. And most people that are calling up, when they're calling me, are coming to the realization, my career may be done. And that's a big thing for people that go onto a job thinking they're going to do 25, they're going to do 30 years, and now they can't do it anymore. Most people, when they're calling up that first time, are just hitting that realization like, crap, I got to now change gears for my life, what I was going to do, where I'm going to go. And you have to be able to tell them, okay, here's what the process is. Here's what can happen with that. Here's what benefits I think you're going to get. And having that sort of candid conversation up front, if you were in a different situation and you couldn't get accidental and you were going to get ordinary, there's a big difference between 66 and two-thirds and 40%. But from my perspective, I need you to know that up front. Mm-hmm. Hey, this isn't a 66 case. This is a 40 case. Is this something that, you know, you're prepared to go forward with? Or is this something where you want to turn around and try to see if there's any other thing you can do to get back on the job? And having the experience to have those conversations with people and to get them to understand where their place is, where they're going, and what benefits they can have is probably the most important part of the process, is that first conversation right up front, being able to give them a read based upon what information you have.
I also want to jump in here and say that maybe a year before my injury occurred, our department was not allowing people beyond a year now to be on light duty. So for a while, while guys were having surgeries, while guys were doing this and girls and whatever may be going on, even went 13, 14 months and then went back to the road, now is a 12-month deadline. So I've got surgeons and orthopedics saying, there's no way you're going to, as you're getting closer, hey, we're going to call. And the administration saying, well, what do you think? I go, I don't know. You know, we're going to month nine here and I'm going to PT four times a week. And I'm literally just got off walking with assistance and a brace. And, you know, and now as it gets closer, I'm like, oh my God. And I'm told, if you cannot come back to full duty, that's not my decision. If this physician and these people are not going to sign off on you that you're fully recovered, you are fired. You're no longer competent here. And now it's a whole different battle. So that's when I shift gears. I'm like, oh, we're getting close. And like, I can't make this go any faster. I'm doing everything I can. I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do. And then it's I can see all the doctors in my head that I was literally going around trying to find doctors to get different opinions. And you could look at my medical history of like, hey, what do you think? Like, I'm just coming to you on a whim. Can you take a look at some of the stuff? I paid the fees, $150, $200, just to have the reviews of it. Like, yeah, this doesn't look good. Like, well, I got to be back in 12 months. What's your opinions and thoughts? I don't think it's going to happen, right? I got PT. People tell me, my physical therapist saying like, you're not going to go and put a 40-pound fucking belt on and start chasing people around because I wish we could hyper zoom. I could sit on the edge of this. I do it for people sometimes. It makes my skin crawl. When I lift my leg up straight, you just hear. When my PT, I never forget asking the girl who's my physical therapist. She was the head of the place. I said, what's your thoughts? She goes, lift your leg up. And she goes, do you know how insane that sounds? Do you know what that sounds like for a physical therapist? She's like, I'm like, when I hear that, you know how bad that is? And to this day, it does that. And I got to tell you, Chris, you know, when you are eligible for a pension, you receive one, and then you go on to progress in other realms of life. We have this company and there's some success to it. I feel like I'm always under the duress of having to explain myself. But dude, what people don't see behind the scenes is I'm often reminded how limited my mobility is. Merely shooting hoops with my kids in my driveway. Like my oldest is like, hey, you want it? The other day he's like, you want to play basketball against me? And I'm like, well, I'll destroy you because you're 9 and I'm fucking 41. And just goofing off. And then I tried to make a move. Whole knee buckles, right? I'm down and I'm in pain. And I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ almighty. And I'm like holding onto the fence. And my wife's like, what is wrong with you? And I'm like, it's the knee, man. And then even some simple stuff. Like we went to Disney. So we did a lot of walking in Disney. Dude, day two in Disney, I'm in bed. And she's like, what's wrong? I'm like, I can't move. Like from walking in Disney, my knee is so buckled up from just spending a day walking around Disney. And people are like, pension, right? Like, so, you know, and I remind people, there's hundreds and hundreds of reports. You can't just say, I'm sick of it here. I was on a sergeant's list. Things were going well. I mean, you know, you can't. I'm not sitting here trying to explain to people, but I think people are now at this point in my life curious about what occurred. And on top of that 12-month limited period, and that's why I explained it to people, I wasn't getting actual treatment for the first 4 or 5 months because I was going to a doctor in Clark who, and you don't got to say his name because we can't go down that road, who literally is sitting here telling me I have bone bruises. And he's going to inject, I'll never forget, he says to me, I think next time you come back, we're going to start doing calcium injections into your knee. And I literally said to him, I go, you're not injecting me with a thing. And he said, and he turned around. He actually looked like Al Franken, you know, from like Saturday Night Live. Mm-hmm. People, I'm dating myself now. And he turns around and goes, what do you mean? I go, you, I have no faith in you at all. And his nurse is like, oh, well, I'm like, I have zero faith. Every time I come back here, it's a different story. You are not sticking me with anything. I go, I'm going to go for a second opinion. And that's when I was thankful to have a workers' comp attorney.
Well, and you just got at the end of the story to the most important part of that. You had 1 year and you lost 4 months. You lost 4 months in that initial, oh, it's just sprain and strain, go to the PT, go do this, go do that. They probably only did an x-ray, never did an MRI, never saw the structural damage, never saw the things in there that needed never. To be repaired.
And I was begging them for it. They wouldn't give it to me.
Yeah. And during those 4 months, during the physical therapy, all you did was make it worse. So you're 4 months behind. Workers' comp has you working either light duty or out, and you only have 1 year of full pay. So now you're left with 8 months. So not getting whatever surgical interventions are needed sooner in the process really counts against you. We definitely had this issue in COVID where we were actually able to convince a lot of employers to extend the 1 year because of, you know, all the unforeseen circumstances. But unfortunately, with workers' comp and the way it's set up, you're stuck at the will of them and their sort of palliative treatment up front because it's cheaper. It's cheaper to send you to therapy for 12 weeks than to get you an MRI and actually figure out what's wrong with you. I mean, it's just... Strange.
And you can't use your own medical benefits to go get other help because it's under the care of workers' comp.
Because
you can't
as soon as you say it was on the job, your insurance won't cover it.
And what does it cost for an MRI? $2,000, $2,500, $3,000 for an MRI?
I think it's something like that. Yeah. There,
so, like, who's got as a cop $3,000 to go and try to get independent to try to show results? It's a wild ride, man.
Yeah, it's such an unfortunate way that they provide care under those circumstances, and it takes way too long to get results and get treatment. And it puts you in the position where you're scrambling at the end because you're going to come up on your 1 year and you got to know, am I going to stay or am I going to go? And there are plenty of people that call earlier in that process, like, hey, I'm starting to get some treatment. I think this may be, you know, career ending. We're able to sort of already get engaged and give advice along the way. Okay, here's the forms you're going to need. Here's the documents you're going to need. Here's the records you're going to have to start collecting. At least in your circumstance, coming in up front with, okay, we're going to file the application. We're going to submit all the paperwork the next day. It's a way to move the process a lot faster from pensions purposes to get you through what is generally a 6 to 8 month process to get awarded. So look in your situation where 4 months are wasted in treatment. Then 2 months, they finally start
pre-surgery,
They finally start getting you the right diagnostic test, scheduling you for
wait, how about this?
The surgery.
They sent me for an MRI and on my knee, and I did a standing MRI. So now 2 weeks later, I go to the doctor. Now I'm on a time limit, right?
Yeah.
I go to the doctor and I said, he goes, why did you do a standing MRI? I go, I don't know. Fuck you, let me tell you. He goes, you have a knee injury. You can't do a standing MRI. So I had to wait another 2 weeks to get comp to give me a second MRI, approval. And now I'm lost a month because the MRI office in Scotch Plains or wherever it was made me do a standing one. So I come in like, oh, yeah, we should have done a sitting one. I'm like, how am I supposed to know this stuff? Maybe I think you got to stand because you get the machine around me. I don't know. So now I'm doing the laying down MRI. Now we're 2 weeks till I see the doctor again. So I've lost 6 weeks on a medical mishap. Thank God it wasn't anything crazy. Just on that alone.
And then you finally get a surgery. It's going to take a course of treatment. Well, guess what? Your year's up before you're done that treatment. So you have an employer that's going to say, hey, we're not keeping you anymore. There was an employer that when you hit 1 year, they had the note ready. You're fired. It violated, preliminary notice of disciplinary action, all those other things they have to do. But that was their mindset. Look, contract says you got 1 year. Your 1 year's up. You're done. We're not doing anything else for you. It's a problem in some places. Some other municipalities, they'll keep you in pay status, understanding you're still getting treatment. So it's really municipality by municipality. But if it takes 6 to 8 months to process an application, it puts some officers in a difficult position of being 6 to 8 months without income coming from their job,
right,
and waiting for pensions to award them something.
I've seen it a lot.
Given pensions will be retroactive back to your retirement date, but how many cops do you think can go 6 to 8 months without income?
Almost none, right? Because they don't make a lot of money to begin with. There's not a lot of, that's just the way it is. It's not like there's excess funds everywhere. They typically have to borrow money.
There's been some changes since the time of your application where the legislature said, hey, if you have a disability application pending, the employer has to maintain your health benefits.
Okay.
So there's some, and I actually just dealt with that in West Orange. They tried to cut someone's benefits and the lawyer said, oh, no, that letter was sent in error. We don't do that here. So at least it was something was able to be taken care of. But if the officer didn't know that or the person trying to handle the pension wasn't aware of those things, you miss out on things that are available to keep you with benefits going during this one, during this time period where you could have no income.
I remember when I came to you, and I don't want to say the town, but I know that a guy had gotten injured on the job but waited too long. It was a knee injury or something like that with the legs. And now he lost his ability to apply for a full accidental and had to go to an ordinary, which is a 26% difference in his pension. You remember that right after it was me? And I don't want to say the town.
Yeah. It's a situation that comes up actually more often than you think. Someone that had an injury and was not able to do full duty work. And they came in and like, you know what? My chief's going to take care of me and I can stay inside. Mm. And of course the response is, well, how long is that chief going to be there? Because the next one doesn't have to do what this one's doing. So lo and behold, a few years later, chief changes. Chief says, hey, get on the road. Goes out on the road, gets injured again.
On the original injury.
On the original injury. But this time it was not something that would qualify for accidental. So you had a prior good claim that would have went through because you couldn't work full duty, decided to stay, went well beyond the 5-year period of delayed manifestation, got into a new injury.
It was right past it too. I remember it was like 5 years and 2 months.
Got into a new injury that would not qualify, and you get stuck with 40% instead of 66 2/3 because you believed that the chief was going to take care of you. And this is an officer that needed, I think it was 8 or 9 years to get to 25. So you're putting a lot of belief in someone else is going to stay there for 8 or 9 years to protect you, knowing that that's not what's going to happen. Who becomes the next chief is always a crapshoot in places. Who's going to help you out, or what you're going to be on the A side, the B side, whatever else. The person lost out because they didn't follow advice, and there's nothing you can do at that point.
Let me give some advice to people who are injured or do get injured, knowing that workers' compensation attorneys are free and they work on, what's the word? I can't think of it.
It's they a only get paid when it's you, a contingency.
Contingency. Yeah. My apologies. On a contingency for your award at the end. You want to call them right away because we don't realize if it's your first time. This is the first time I ever got injured, right? First time I've ever out on workers' comp, 14 years in. And day one, there's an investigator at my house knocking at my door from workers' compensation. So I'm talking to her, and I can be honest with you, she was polite. She didn't give me a hard time. I call out to the our union guy, and I go, they're going to be popping by. So I end up getting a comp attorney right away. And he said, next time she shows up, let her know you've been retained, that you've retained somebody, and she can't talk to you anymore. And that's it. So that attorney, that investigator showed up again, and I said, hey, just so you know, anytime you show up, I have to call my attorney. And she understood. She knew the game. She knew that I caught on to it. And she went, you won't see me again. And that was it. So that's just another reason. And here's one more piece of advice if you get injured. Please, I am begging all of you, because I'm telling you, you're going to be, I guarantee there's people listening to this podcast going, he's right, I wish I would listen to shit like this, blah, blah, blah. Please, please, please document and record. In this state, at least, it's a one consent party. So you can record somebody unbeknownst to them as long as you know that you're recording. And my and you could jump in on this.
You got to be careful about that, because it came up a lot in police departments where some officers were recording other officers.
Yeah, I'm talking about your
superiors. So in the job aspect, you may have an SOP that says thou shall not do that. And if you do, you have an obligation to turn it over. So you got to be careful you're not violating a department policy on don't record your other employees out in, you know, private sector.
Comp nurse calls you.
Comp nurse, anything else, by all means.
Listen, I kid you not, and I never filed a formal complaint because I just don't care enough, and I'll keep it vague. I had a doctor tell me, this is no bullshit. I said, how are you sending me back to work? And his response was, if it was up to me, I'd keep you out for about another 8 weeks. But comp's breathing down my back and they want you back in. And I was told if you would have recorded that on that guy, his license would have been fucking vamoose. And this was a very well-known doctor. And that's what he said to me, because he trusted me. And with the crazy, just so you guys know what the crazy thing is, watch your conversation with your doctors, because they report it back to compensation. So I was just talking about, like, I'm like, yeah, no, I do this police training thing. And the reports come back like, has a police training company. Wants to leave. They're writing notes like that. I have this thing like highly likely to try to leave. Like, what the fuck are you talking? Dude, I literally have a conversation what I do. And that's what he's feeding back. So you trust this doctor in confidence, and he's literally a spy for workers' comp. As this may sound conspiracy theories, how true is this shit?
But it's, you have doctors that are paid for and selected by the insurance carrier. The insurance carrier's job is to spend the least amount of money possible to get someone back to work, and to also, you know, try to push them back to work. So what you're saying, it's not conspiracy. It's they're the person paying the bill. And when you're the person paying the bill, you have more control over what happens in the confines of that examination room and what the recommendations are going forward. Am I surprised to hear someone say, I would do this, but they want me to do that? I don't think it's surprising. And lots of times it is a good idea to record what the doctors are saying, because too oftentimes there's a different conversation that's given to you than what's in the report that goes somewhere else.
It's wild.
And then in the future, when you question the doctor about it, it's going to be, oh, well, it's in my report, so it's got to be true, instead of, oh, here's the recording of you saying something completely different. So we did this in the context of, honestly, in it was a fitness for duty case, where we had a client that recorded the fitness for duty evaluation completely, transcribed it. And the report was saying things that just were not discussed or how it was. And the doctor didn't realize there was a recording of it. So we had him testify first about what the report says and then give him the transcript and go through, well, that's not what he said, is it? Oh, no, that's not what he said. Oh, that's not what he said, is it? No, that wasn't what was said.
Wow.
And it's so difficult to get through, oh, you know, he's a doctor. He's got to be truthful. Of course, whatever he writes has got to be what the truth is. It's not. Doctors are just like everyone else in the world. You know, there's good ones, there's bad ones, there's ones that'll lie, and there's ones that are honest. So just having a recording saved this guy's career. I actually gave him a good civil suit too. And it works the same in the workers' comp context as to what's really going on and what the treatment should be and where things should go. And it can save people even for the pension evaluations. I mean, we've had some clients actually record the evaluations with the board doctors because some of them are saying one thing and then they write in the report something else, and you have it as sort of an insurance policy going forward in case it was anything other than accidental.
It's wild.
Because it's actually the other thing it confirms is most evaluations are only 5 to 10 minutes for orthopedic exams. And the doctors are writing, oh, I spent a half hour with the person. How'd you spend a half hour when the whole thing is recorded soup to nuts in 10 minutes?
Right.
It just, you have to be an advocate for yourself. And I think that's what all of this goes down to. If you don't advocate and try to protect yourself, no one else is going to do it for you.
How about this one? And I want to just jump on and add one more thing to this. Read your reports thoroughly. I get sent for a physical evaluation. I don't know what it was with some company that of course, workers' compensation had chosen for me to use. I mean, dude, it was comical. Like, and I wasn't putting an act on. They can usually tell. So I remember not reading my report back, and it was like a 50-page report. And I'm like, man, I should probably read this thing. I go to like page 29 and literally talks about my, now they're sending me back. So the doctor that I'm talking about, same doctor, said, I read the report. It looks like you're ready to go back. And I'm like, now I'm in a panic. I'm like, I can't even fucking walk. What are these guys talking about? We're like, how the fuck am I going to, I can't, I'm limping still. So I go into the report, page 29. I'm not kidding you. And I don't want it. It's not verbatim, but it says something like this. Has no strength in left knee. If is going to fight a person, our suggestion is put left knee forward, right knee back for support to throw a punch. I was like.
That was the functional capacity exam.
Yeah, yeah.
Is what they call it.
FCE, right.
So sometimes they say that, and sometimes it says if they're going to try to subdue a suspect that's over 30 pounds, they should ask for help.
Yes, that was in mine too. So yeah,
because how many people under 30 pounds are you arresting?
Mine said if needs to get physical. Mine actually said if needs to get use physical force, it's highly recommended that he has another police officer with him. Like, do you not realize we don't roll in cars of four of us? Right. No. This is literally what it says in my thing, and I remember saying. I brought it to my administration. I go, and you guys told me I need to come back. Look at page 29. Read this out loud. And they're like this. And they actually submitted. They went, that's fucked up. And I go, yeah, it's fucked up. Guys, I'm not sitting here trying to make a big thing about this. You literally have this FCE. They couldn't even say that, no, he's good. There's nothing. They said, we found stuff, but let's make it good so comp can get their hands out of this one and let this guy go deal with it on his own. So, it was crazy. So read your reports. Read them thoroughly. You might not think you're a doctor. Know your contracts. Read your contracts. You know how many people we had from our agency? Because a couple guys got injured in tandem. So we ended up like teaming up a little bit together. And we had a captain of ours who's like, nah, that's not true. Da-da-da, you can't do that. And I'm now I've got the PBA contract is not anything super complicated. It's basically not hard to read. Yeah, and if you don't know what the words mean, you can always go to the dictionary, find a thesaurus or maybe some synonyms to help you understand it. And we're like, nah, it says it right here. And he's like, no, that's not how it works. And then we're going to an attorney, like, we had to get a labor attorney to interpret it. And the labor attorney's like, it's exactly how it works. This captain was on our side. He wasn't not on our side. He was just so pompous and thought he knew everything. And he was fucking wrong. And, you know, we're like trained from the inception to believe everything this captain says because he's very smart. And he had no fucking clue what he was talking about during this time. He just didn't.
We'll have to go over labor stuff next time.
Yeah, for sure. No question.
There's a lot of stuff to cover there with contracts and discipline and grievances and those things.
We touched on discipline. I really wanted this to be an introductory into discipline and the, because dude, I hear it, man. I hear it from these fucking guys. And, you know, we're fortunate enough to be in a state where there's a good pension in place. And I got to be honest, compared to the rest of the country, we are significantly more protected here. California, some of the more wealthier states, quote unquote, in some sense.
You also paid a lot more for these benefits than other places would do. So
kicking 10% into your pension.
10% of your pay went into this pension for all these years.
Like an insurance plan.
To do this. So it's something you paid for. It's actually the most well-funded pension system in New Jersey. I think they're somewhere around maybe 70% funded, where some pension funds you see are like 50% funded. So it was set up with municipalities always, you know, paying their part and employees paying your part. It does what it's designed to do, protect those that, that need it. There's definitely scrutiny in the applications, like you were saying, that some people have tried to game the system, and it's a pretty tedious process that can weed out a lot of them. And there are some people that, that get through and then get caught afterwards. We were talking before we even came in here about different people that were caught across the country who had retired from New Jersey and were doing things that were completely inconsistent with what their disability retirement was. So there'll always be some people that, that sneak through, and, you know, for the most part, they'll get caught at some point because they get greedy. And, you know, for those people that really need it and deserve it, it's there for them.
Yeah. A lot of, and honestly, right. I know a lot of guys that were really, really hurt. And I mean, you represent, I sent a lot. How many people have I sent to you? Like, wait, I, let's be clear. I hold the record, right?
Yeah.
By a lot. It's gotta be by a lot.
Yeah. But that goes back to what I said in the beginning. How do you find the lawyer to do this stuff? It's word of mouth. My firm does not advertise.
I just want to be very clear. There are Chris Gray Show today here with no cannolis.
Nothing. Right, I got a cup and water.
No, I'm complaining a little bit because I sent about 800 clients and I get a cannoli. I just want a cannoli, Chris.
You want a cannoli?
Yeah.
You got me here. I finally remembered who you were.
This son of a bitch. He knows exactly who I am, this son of a bitch. And he thinks it's not going to behoove him and benefit him, because I guarantee you that before we finish this, you'll give your information out and you probably have 900 fucking phone calls pending. So I'm at least entitled to like maybe a back massage or something like that. Come on, you got strong
Frankie,
hands.
You want to give him a back massage?
Chris, you have very strong hands. So I can see that. I mean, I'm sore. You know what I mean?
I don't think your wife would like that.
I don't think she cares, to be quite honest with you.
Maybe mine will.
Well, you tell her you like the Mercedes you're driving, Toots. I got to rub this guy's back a little bit. Wait, I wanted to just jump in here, and also I want to assimilate this to a similar thing that I talk about sometimes. I haven't talked about it in a while. And it's no different than every cop knows that when you're new, they bring some dude in who's a financial investor. And he buys everybody pizza and soda. And then he tells you, here's your forms, here's your applications, fill it in. If you donate the most right now for deferred compensation, you will have $1 million when you retire. And your lieutenant leans over and goes, I did it. You should do it too. I'm looking in retirement 3 years and I got 900 grand in the bank. Folks, if you are enticed to donate your hard-earned money to a gentleman who bought you pizza and handed you out applications on a paper thing and then consulted you for 5 minutes about your plan for financial investments, you're a fucking idiot. And guess who was an idiot too? Me. Until I found somebody who actually had my vested interest in place. Here's what I'm doing to fix it. I don't have anything done backroom deals with Chris or Tomorrow Now, who's my financial guy. They're coming to our conference in Nashville. They're going to set up booths. They're bringing four of their employees to just go over what people are involved in and try to give them advice. That's essentially what we're doing at our conference in the interim of experiencing the conference itself. They will be there looking at people's stuff. And dude, 90% of the people that go to them, they're like, this is not for you. I don't know. Why are you involved in something like a plan like this? Why wouldn't you do something like this? And this is why. And they're like, well, I don't know. I just met a guy and he said I should just give money. So getting financial education is just as important as getting education like this, because you're going into things and doing things based on the testimony or the advice of your coworkers, who I hate to tell you, don't know any better. If you were ever taking advice from somebody about money, I would want to know at least comfortably that their portfolio is ridiculous. It's like blue collar parents giving their kids, blue collar children, financial advice. If you're listening to your blue collar parents on financial advice, you're going to be blue collar as well, which is fine. But if you are looking for good financial advice, why don't you go to somebody who, I don't know, has money and ask them what they do? Stop fucking listening to your parents who have no idea what the fuck they're talking about when it comes to money. Stop talking about what should I do with your coworkers who are broke as fuck. You're a fucking lieutenant. I remember going on, I got on the job in my last agency in 2005. So it's 6, 7, and 8 is when the whole thing crashed. And everybody's 401ks like floored. They lost like 45, 50%. And I'll never forget guys when I first met them, like, yeah, I'm out of here in a year. Look at this thing. I got $1 million. I got 1.6 in the bank from this deferred comp that's going to carry me through my years. And 3 years later, I'm like, hey, I thought you were leaving. Nah, I got to wait it out. I can't touch this thing till it bounces back.
I got a kid in college.
Oh, yeah, I hate that one. Anyway,
Look, I think that with any of the decisions for financial advisors, attorneys, those things, you got to do your homework. You got to figure out, you know, who they are. Don't be enticed by the free pizza or cannolis. You got to see what their track record is, see what their experience is. Make sure it's going to work for you, that they've helped with people in those circumstances that, you know, have the income and the disposable amount of money to be able to do those things. You can't just go off of who's there with the pizza. It's a good way for them to get clients.
But it's wild, dude.
Yeah.
And what's crazy is like 90% of these financial investors, I mean, if you are calling your bank or calling Charles, who do you think you're getting at Charles Schwab when you're worth $50,000? You're getting a kid who graduated college 3 months ago, who grabbed the job that his Uncle Pete got him as a $50,000 a year with a 10% kicker. Fucking guys, you are not getting the experienced person. And if you, just so everybody knows, if you're coming to the conference and this airs before the conference, which I think we'll bump this one up as well, there are only so many slots tomorrow. Now, which is the company that's coming down to consult, is going to have available for one-on-ones. If you want to do one-on-ones with them there, please don't wait. Get in early. They'll be setting up their booth on Sunday. Get in early so you can get a consultation spot. I don't know exactly how they're going to run it, but I think there's going to be like an iPad set up, and they're going to get 15-minute free consultations. And I got to tell you, everybody I've set them up with is like, where you saved my fucking life. Kenny was like, when he found Jeremy, he was like, because Jeremy comes on the podcast and gives financial advice, he's like, I can't work with him because he's not licensed in Indiana yet. And then they got licensing, and he's like, oh, I can't thank you enough. And it's not that, it's not some kind of slick move. It's saying, I'm watching my brothers and sisters do dumb shit. Let me help you have a better, more fulfilled life. Where can they find Chris Gray's information? Where they find you? Namely, New Jersey police officers and firefighters and people like that.
Yeah, we do stuff statewide through New Jersey, all the way from Cape May up to Sussex. We have offices in Mount Laurel and Clifton. The firm name is Sciarra, S-C-I-A-R-R-A, and Catrambone, C-A-T-R-A-M-B-O-N-E. You can find us at sciarralaw.com. My office number is 856-888-7066.
Do you want me to stop giving out your cell phone number?
No, people call both. they're always there.
You said to me one time, you're like, you give my cell phone number out to everybody.
You do.
Yeah, I know. Sorry.
That's fine. Most people have it. It's a direct way just to get a hold of me. So, because I'm doing labor stuff all through the state too. So wherever I'm at, my cell phone's with me. So I can generally get back to people when I'm driving. And we probably had plenty of conversation when I was going between one place and another.
Yeah, of
course,
dude. Catching
up about stuff. So.
Well, I'm glad I finally got you in because this is the value I wanted to deliver to people. And you know what, honestly, for taking your time out of the day and helping out and giving some guidance on this, I think people, just so we're clear, everybody that I've sent to Chris for pensions is very thankful that they use Chris. And that's an endorsement from me with, again, there is no backroom deals where I get a cut of anything that he does. I just, for me, I would never put my name on something that I didn't believe in. And I've actually turned down a lot of people who want to do business with us because I just didn't like their product or I didn't like them as a person. But the results speak for themselves. And, you know, if you took the time to come out and give advice to 500,000 listeners, you know, and you procure some revenue or business from it on the other side, good for them for finding you and now knowing you exist, but also good for you for taking the time out and doing this thing. And I, you know, I hope that I see you again in about 8 years.
I think I'll make it a little bit shorter for you this time.
Okay. We'll do this again.
Look, it's doing this job and doing this work is all based upon reputation. And we value the reputation that we have people like you that are just happy clients that go out there and say, look, when you need something, you got to go to this guy, you got to go to this firm. And we will continue to build this firm that way. Like I said, our advertising budget is $0. We don't need it. We have happy people to go out there. And I tell that to new people coming in, like, look, you are here because someone else told you to come here, and I'm going to take care of you because I'm hoping you send the next person.
Appreciate you being here, brother.
Anytime.
Guys, if you're in an area where you're trying to get to our classes, but we're not close to you, fret not. We actually have on-demand training at StreetCop.com. You can take that course online right now, and then you could attend that training in the future at no additional cost. You can redeem your voucher, so you get two for the price of one. We don't want to deny you the ability to take this training now, especially knowing that it can keep you safe, at a very minimum, putting bad guys in jail where they belong, and at the maximum, going home to your family. Check out StreetCop.com for that offer.